yeshiva classroom. And, you know, now that the schools are out of session during the vacation period, I have the great privilege to have a friend and a teacher, a rabbi, who teaches in a post-high school yeshiva, a school for Jewish studies, where our students are able to understand and appreciate the heritage that we bring to our people from our forefathers. And I just wanted to start off with just a comment that our people are a very unique people, in that Abraham, our forefather, Isaac and Jacob, their sons, were very unique in that they were able to understand that there is a God, and because of the fact that they came to that realization, we can go into how they came to that conclusion, you know, as far as looking at the world and seeing the plan and purpose and everything, and they concluded to that effect. And as a result, God chose the Jewish people and gave them special attention. Gave them special attention in His offspring and our children even till today, because it says in the Torah, it says in chapter 18, verse 19. That I know that Abraham will teach his sons and his household the way of God. I know that Abraham will teach his son Isaac and his household the ways of God. And we're trying to carry on this tradition. Not only do we do our best in following and living by those commandments, which were eventually given at Mount Sinai, those basic principles that Abraham concluded were in effect given divinely by God to the Jewish people in front of 3 million people, and we carry on this tradition today. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Rabbi Moshe. Comment, criticize, and correct anything that I did say, and add whatever.
It was good to see you again.
Yeah.
I guess I'll take the first point first. It's always good to go in order. The concept of God choosing the Jews, the whole concept of a chosen people, mm-hmm. is, I think, a big misnomer, even within the Jewish world. I think a lot of Jews are ignorantly arrogant about what their place is. I mean, the fact is God did not create Jew and Gentile. God created Adam and Eve. So God's plan was that there should be human beings that have intelligence, and they should see these ideas and ponder the world and you know, look at the great universal laboratory that God created for man to discover God in the world. He created such an immense amount of wisdom, and this is not, as Rabbi Reuven Mann had mentioned recently, a very good point. I rejoined it to Einstein. He mentioned that it's not for the animals, and it's not for the plants, and it's not for things which are not, do not possess intelligence. God embedded the physical world and created it with wisdom in order that it should be recognized. Not by him. God knows his knowledge. So why did he create this universal laboratory, as we can refer to it accurately, for discovery? By who? I mean, who would be the ones that would discover it? It would be man.
So in other words, he created a universe, and it was for man to discover?
The universe.
He didn't just tell people.
The universe was not created for itself, as scientists, err. They look at the universe as an ends in itself. I mean, our L'chod Dodi prayer, one of the prayers we say on the Friday evening, in terms of the prayers that we say on Friday evenings, is L'chod Dodi. And in this prayer, we state the idea that the Sabbath was the last in creation, but the first in God's thought. So what does it mean, the last in creation and the first in God's thought? It means to say that the Sabbath, the day where there's an abstinence from any type of physical labor, is really the whole goal of creation. So God didn't create the world for itself. He created it so there should be a day each week where people would stop and ponder and not be involved in labor, but would be involved in wisdom, in studying wisdom. Now this This was not just for the Jewish people. There were no Jews at the outset of creation.
Adam and Eve were not Jewish.
Adam and Eve, Abraham, the founder of Judaism, was not Jewish. Meaning to say that God did not segregate human beings into more preferred ones and less preferred ones. God's will is that all human beings should have the ability and the opportunity to be involved in wisdom and to study the world and use proofs, like Abraham did, to arrive at the idea that idolatry is foolish. Abraham was surrounded. Everybody in his culture and in his towns where he lived were completely steeped in idolatry and bowing down to stone gods and wood gods. And he was able to ponder at the young age of 3 and start to discover, as Maimonides taught, when he reached the age of 40, he finally came to a clear understanding, as best as man is capable, of God. But he used proofs. He used his own mind without any teachers. That means every man. And he was not Jewish. He was a human being like anybody else. But he was the one that started saying that the world has to have a creator. The world did not create itself. There are laws that govern the world every day. There's ideas of justice and righteousness because we see that whatever created the world created many human beings, not just one. Mm-hmm. That means that God wants everyone to have a fair share. That means equality must exist. That means righteousness and justice. And this is what the prophets in Judaism have constantly exhorted the people to be involved in, to abandon false ideas, but to be based on wisdom, on proof, that which is, can be discovered just by pondering the world like Abraham exemplified.
Well, so, I wanted to just interrupt there. You're saying that Abraham pondered and came up with conclusions as opposed to other people like, you know, Seth, Methuselah, Chanoch. They were
too.
All righteous people,
yes.
And they believed in the one God uniqueness of his creator, of the creator. So what sets Abraham apart, and
Abraham,
how did that happen?
Abraham was steeped in idolatry and raised in this fashion, whereas Seth and Adam and Hevel, Abel, these individuals all had ideas straight from Adam, who spoke to God, and therefore Adam was a prophet, and his sons were, because they had communication with God, and this idea was lost eventually, even at the third generation. The grandson of Adam had heard, but the point I wanted to get back to is that the Jews are not chosen, that meaning to say that we are better than anybody else. We have the same exact design, physically, spiritually, mentally. There are many Jews that think there's an idea that the Jew has a better soul. That's just arrogance, and it's haughtiness. It's not right. It's not part of reality. God created human beings. What he did later on in the year 2448 was he gave the Torah.
2448 since the creation of the world.
Right.
And what year is it today?
It's about 3,300 years ago.
3,300
years ago. He gave the system of Torah, but he didn't change human beings' design. That means that the same human beings that came from Noah, that came from Adam, are the human beings that existed at Sinai, are the human beings that existed today, Jew or Gentile. The only thing is that God said Abraham was the one that discovered monotheism, and he taught it, and therefore he chose his seed to be the ones that would carry it. But who did they carry it for? Who did God choose Abraham?
Oh, God chose...
He chose Abraham.
Abraham.
But he chose
why?
Him...
Why did he... Why
I'll
was
get
he
to
chosen?
It. He chose Abraham because he discovered monotheism, and he demonstrated par excellence that a person that's steeped in idolatry, just with his mind, can discover God.
Yeah, but there, Seth knew God. Seth knew there was a unique being. Adam knew that
again,
there was a unique being.
He was not steeped in idolatry. Abraham was a very good example of somebody that this is the worst type of level, the lowest level that man can reach. He's involved in idolatry and thinks that God is this stone idol, yet with his own mind he can extricate himself, and using proof and reasoning embedded in every human being's mind, he demonstrated par excellence that the capabilities of a human being. Now, we are luckily, you know, we have the Torah. We are the recipients of a systemized law created by the same creator of the universe. So we have a greater advantage than Abraham did in terms of having directives that will bring us to the truth. Abraham didn't have a teacher.
Oh, you mean because he didn't have a teacher and he did this on his own, therefore he got to be chosen as opposed to...
That's my
to
theory.
To Adam or or Noah?
There were no idolaters at the time that God created man. So there was no.
Say that again?
There were no idolaters when God created Adam.
Okay.
It was just Adam and Eve.
Right.
But later on, generations afterwards, where the world started following their fantasies, and they assumed that physical objects of...
Well, like
sort of spiritual power. Let me finish. Since they felt that spiritual objects had powers, and they that physical objects had spiritual powers, I mean to say, So now they steep themselves in idolatry, and God wanted there to be some sort of a corrective measure for the world that was now corrupt. And Abraham on his own came to the right ideas. So therefore what he did was, is he selected him and his people afterwards in order to be a light for the rest of the world. But we're not chosen because of any merit of our own, first of all. We're chosen because of Abraham and the forefathers, not our own merit. Second of all, our obligation is not merely to teach Jew, but to teach any human being what the right ideas are. And the reason why God gave a system to one people, because these are the people that were embodying the right ideas, but not to keep it to yourself and to look askance at other people, that's wrong. Everybody is created in God's image. Every human being, man and woman, is a potential great individual if they use their mind and follow and work on themselves to perfect themselves and realize true ideas. And we have the obligation to actually teach them and to make these ideas exposed to them.
Are we doing that?
We have to. I think the problem is with the Jewish community.
Yeah.
Another big problem is that they do segregate themselves and do not go out to other people.
Oh,
number one.
That's a very good point. Let's talk about the Jewish community. When I talk about the Jewish community, I'm talking about the quote-unquote Orthodox. I
mean, I'm not pinpointing. All I'm saying is that there's an obligation with the Jewish community to teach the ideas to non-Jews as well.
You mean like the Reform and conservative people should teach
Reform and conservative have corrupted systems of Judaism.
There are no denominations in Judaism.
No, either you're following God's system or you're not following God's system.
Right, you hear that? Those people that think that, you know, I can shop at Wallbounds or King Cullen, and it's a supermarket is a supermarket, and a synagogue is a synagogue, whether it's Reform, Reconstruction.
God gives a system, not bad. God says in the Torah,
there's no picking and choosing. It's not a restaurant.
No, it's not. I mean, again, I think that's a very light type of an equation. I think we should really try to be serious about the severity of somebody who's losing his life because they aren't living according to God's system. I mean, you can ask, why didn't God give the entire Torah to all the people? Well, he gave a minimal system. Seven of the 613 Jewish laws are obligatory for the rest of the nations.
Well, what are they? You mean seven?
I don't want to go into what I'm just trying to bring out a point. It's important.
Because we have Gentile and Jew watching this program, Rabbi.
The point is, I understand. And it's important that we reach them. And to get to the... Mm-hmm. So it's a minimum amount. It's not that is all you're allowed to keep if you're Gentile. This is a minimum. If a Gentile wants to keep all the rest of the system of the Torah, he will benefit just like the Jew.
You're right.
By keeping it. There's only one or two laws that it doesn't keep, and the reason why, for example, Sabbath, Tefillin, the holidays. He doesn't keep those because these are to be a sign as to which people have God's law from Sinai. So God said, Gentile can keep every law, except don't keep Tefillin, the black boxes that contain the law, because that is supposed to be a signal that whoever's wearing them has the law. So you want to make sure that you keep a designated group as the understanded authority as to who is actually able and capable to teach the law. If everybody, if Gentile and Jew alike wore the tefillin, or Gentile and Jew alike kept the Sabbath, now there would be a blur of the lines. Who's the real authority? Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we have the proper teachers, and if a Gentile learns as much and he wants to become Jewish, he is equal to the Jew in terms of his knowledge. So that is something which we accept readily. But
well, you know,
one last point.
Yeah.
The point that I was getting to is that the Jewish world, instead of admonishing the Gentile world, Christianity and Islam and Buddhism, and saying that this is incorrect and proving to them, what they're doing is they're trying to coddle them and they're trying to placate them in order to get recognition.
Uh-huh.
This type of desire to go and meet with the Pope and to meet with big leaders and to have interfaith discussions is a way of saying that we recognize your religion. But that is completely against Judaism, because Judaism is the only religion where God revealed himself to masses. Therefore, there's only one religion, which is Judaism, that has a proof that God desires this religion to exist. Every other religion is based on one person's word. Mm-hmm. So you either believe him or you don't. But that's not a way to live your life.
In other words, a person came out of the tent and he
says that God spoke to me, whether it was Jesus. There's no proof.
I was on a road and I got a calling, and this is the way we should conduct our lives. Everything was abrogated.
So is that based on proof? Would you say that that's based on proof?
I think it's ridiculous. I'm trying to be a devil's advocate, but the point is, of course, the Jews are a stiff-necked people. that there were 3 million. So therefore, they had to show. They had to be shown. You know, the show me state. They, you know, God descended in a thick cloud and spoke to Moses so that the people could hear and therefore believe. They heard it with the,
right,
the God has descended in the thickness of a cloud and spoke to the Moses so that the Jewish people who stood in front of Mount Sinai could hear and all and therefore believe. And that's why you have the happening of Sinai where the millions of forefathers saw this happening. But today I've come across Jews that say, well, you know what? I want to be a Christian and I want to be a Jew and I want to do both things. What do you say to somebody like that?
Well, that sounds like schizophrenia. I mean, you can't believe that God is both physical and not physical. Christianity believes that God made himself into a man. This is completely against the tenets of Judaism and against reality. God controls the physical world. He created the physical world. Therefore, he is not governed by the very laws that he created. The concept that God should become a man is ludicrous. It's a crazy idea.
We're going to get a lot of calls in from those statements because other ideologies are very fervent in their belief.
Well, that's a good point that you just touched on, fervent. This concept of religious fervor, because you're so zealous in your religion or you're born to parents who follow religion, does that mean you should follow that same idea? Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense. You have to follow what is true and what's provable and what's based on reality. Just like a person will never accept 2 + 2 = 5, no matter how many billions of people say it to him, a person should also use reason in the area of religion. This is something which, for some reason, has gone awry, and religions are just following belief. They're not using intelligence to understand, is this religion right or wrong? And the bottom line is, if every religion says we have the right one and you have the wrong one, that means they agree with the concept that there is some method to prove which one is right or wrong. And they also say that not every religion is right. So if religions themselves, at least that's the one thing which they are correct about, that not all religions are correct. Now, if not all religions are correct, by what means do you arrive at a proof as to which religion is correct? Well, the same way we prove historical events, whether Caesar existed or whether Alexander existed, this is based on masses being at an event.
Mm-hmm.
And
masses being at an event, namely?
And the second ingredient is that what they perceived was easy. For example, masses being in Rome or seeing the wars that were fought in history, and everybody knows which nation was which, everybody knows the country, everybody knows the date. So simple phenomena witnessed by millions or tens of thousands of people, at least, is the way we prove anything in history. So this is why God orchestrated Sinai, that there should be millions of people witnessing an event, because he wanted this to be the one proof that would survive all generations, and we see it has. Unfortunately, many people follow their emotions and don't accept it. That does not mean it's not true. Just because a person, just because there's billions of people who are Muslim and millions of Christians, this does not, and just because there's very few Jews, that in no way is a barometer for which one is reflecting reality. Because you could have masses of people believing something. Hitler got how many people to believe that they were an Aryan race? Did he prove to them that there's any difference in them over any other nation? No. But he got them based on believing in a concept. But not that they witnessed anything. Hitler could not get them to witness, to claim that they witnessed an event. There's a difference. It's a very important thing that people realize. To say that you have masses of people with a belief, that should disprove Judaism because you have more people that are Christian. No. You can get millions of people to believe something.
Numbers don't make it right.
No. Numbers don't make it right when it comes to belief. But numbers do make it right when it comes to witnessing an event.
Okay.
An event is not a belief. An event means objective reality. Did something take place?
And what happened at
Judaism
Sinai?
Judaism has that, hands down.
Uh-huh. They had that.
They heard a miraculous voice coming out of fire. The mount was on fire. And Moses went into the mountain, and he came down with these miraculous tablets. And this was witnessed by all the people. And every single one of them passed it on for generations and generations. If that event never took place, You think anybody would pass it on? Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an analogy to Christianity, which disproves Christianity.
Listen, again, Rabbi, we don't want to, we have enough Jews out there. I don't want to have a revolution.
We do not hold the truth back because we're afraid of offending people.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is what the Jew is obligated to speak.
Okay.
He's not trying to anger somebody. Mm-hmm. And if a person does get angry, they have to work on themselves. But the concept that a Jew has is something which he must reiterate. And he must make it available because that's God's will, that the rest of the world should have the truth. Now, it's not something we coerce people.
Well,
we just
start?
Present it to
how
them.
How do you start? I mean,
this is how we start. We talk. We get a television show. Like, you've been so generous with your time to allot time of your own and to require public channel access and to make time to speak to people where it's available. Now, again, we don't coerce. We just have to present the ideas and let the people think about it. We live our own lives, and they live their own as well. And this applies to other Jews and other religions. But we have an obligation to speak and not to conceal it. We should not be going around trying to placate the religions just to get recognition for us. We should be sitting down with them and exposing the flaws that they have in terms of their thinking. Just like somebody should tell me if I make a mistake in math or science or in my thinking. I would be very happy if somebody would show me where I'm making an error. So this is what God wants. He gave the system at a time when idolatry was rampant, and the Egyptian culture was involved in how many different gods that they have, the god of the sun and the god of the moon. So what did God do with the 10 plagues? He smote all the different gods. The Nile River was a god. The sun was a god. The Nile River he turned into blood. The sun he turned into darkness. So you see, God's attempt was to educate Egypt and show. And again, this record is not something which is denied. Even the Christian world and the Muslim world accepts all the historical accounts of the Bible.
Uh-huh.
So we see that God's intent is really to educate, and he gave the Jews that mission that we should educate as well, and to be honest, and to do it in a pleasant fashion, but not to try to conceal. To try to conceal the truth, and just to be friendly with other religions, is against God's will. He did not want the rest
of the
world to
be darkness. Well, is the Jewish community doing this? Who's doing this in the Jewish community, reaching out? I mean, we have enough trouble just trying to get a message across to Jewish people. I mean, you're advocating the entire spectrum of all ideologies should be spoken to.
Of course.
I mean, how do we do that? I mean, we don't even have the Jewish people that are not believers and atheists.
Well, first of all,
or agnostics. They don't know, whether there is a God or not.
Well,
how do you prove this?
One thing I do, that I have a website, Masorah.org.
Okay, please give that out.
So we have.
Don't be calling our number, if you want to make comments on.
I would invite anybody who.
Everybody get a pen.
I would invite you to take a look at what we've done. We have a website, Mesora.org. It's Mesora.org. And this website is designed, we started about 8 years ago, and with a great programmer and editor and myself. My name is Rabbi Moshe Ben Chaim, by the way. So you'll be able to read where I'm addressing these different issues on the site. And we write not just for Jews, we're writing for questions that come in from Gentiles, from Christians, from Noahide, questions that are very important to each one of you. And based on the questions and the response, we've created, I would estimate, close to 1,500 articles, audio files, live classes that you can listen to right from your PC with no software.
Give that out again. Give that slowly.
The website is Mesora.org.
How do you spell it?
Mesora.org.
Right.
And again, is you could search the site for articles on Christianity and on Islam and on Judaism and the tenets of reality and how to think properly and statements of the rabbis and to come to a understanding as to which religion God really desires all human beings to follow. And to answer your question, what are we supposed to do? This is our effort in order to make it available. It's a completely free site. It's been free since the time we started it. We have a publication we put out each week called The Jewish Times. That is a free publication that you can subscribe to. You just send an email to subscribe at Mesora.org.
Mesora.org. MESORA.org. And how many people are hitting your website?
We have approximately 6,000 visits to the website weekly.
Really?
We had 6,000? Last year about 320,000 visits to the site. And you know, the site is thank God, available to everybody freely. And I spend a lot of time, you know, questions come in by email or phone call. And the live classes, I mean, all the links you'll see there. It's best, I actually have to go at this point, but I would say this is, you know, what people should do in terms of if they're interested in learning and knowing what
Could you give us just a comment or two on the Messiah and the Jewish concept and how it, you know, rubs, you know, the other ideology, you know, especially being that the whole grounding of the whole movement.
What specifically do you want to know?
You know, how do, you know, Jews know the Messiah has not come? And what is it that we will be able to understand when he does come?
Well, there will be a more general increase in recognition of God. Maimonides says that there's no difference between now and the days of Messiah, except for the fact that we will not be subjugated to any type of governmental oppression. Other than that, human beings will be the same, but the whole world will be filled with more of an understanding, and this Messiah will be, I think, greater than King Solomon in terms of wisdom. He'll have a great ability to disseminate wisdom. The rest of the world will recognize God's one system that he gave at Sinai. And again, I urge everybody to think clearly and be honest with yourself when you're trying to understand which religion is the correct religion. They all can't be correct because they all contradict each other. So there has to only be one. The question is, how do you arrive at proving which religion is correct? The way you do that is by using intelligence and using the proofs of history. Did God ever, with any other religion, give a mass revelation and tell them this is the system and not to add to it and not to detract and that this system will never be abolished? God never did that, except with Judaism. Every other religion is based on the hearsay of a few individuals. And I'll finish on one point.
Don't finish. We love to hear you.
I have to but the point is that people have this claim, for example, one of the claims in the Christian New Testament is that Jesus fed 5,000 men and women, I think, a loaf of bread and two fish or something of that nature. Now, if that was such a miracle that he could feed 5,000 people with one loaf of bread and two pieces of fish, why was it that this was not spread from that point forward by these 5,000 people? It wasn't recorded until 100 years or so later, and there's dispute on that. There's even four different versions of all the different events that they supposedly recorded about Jesus. But the very concept, that the very fact that there was nothing talked about for 100 years after this so-called event, the so-called miracle, proves that it did not happen. There's no way you can keep 5,000 people silent if they saw a miracle. And what's the proof? Sinai. There's an unbroken chain all the way back to Sinai of this story because it was a real story. I have to go. I hope to see you soon.
Could we get your website out again? Because
yeah,
I want
website.
People to call you and to ask questions that you'll answer personally on that website.
Yes. We pay attention to all the emails that come in, no matter how many they are. We do our best to answer them, and a lot of times an email will have a very good question. And just last week, a woman sent in an email. It was a fantastic question, and it took the entire day to think into it and to give her a response.
What was the question?
She had a question in terms of trusting rabbis as opposed to trusting your own mind, which was a good question because we have an authoritative body of the rabbis in the Torah system. Plus, we also have the mandate that we have to use intelligence, which was demonstrated by Abraham. So when do you trust the rabbis and when do you not? So it took hours to write. Questions deserve a good answer, and that's, you know, what our mission is at Mesora. So again, I invite you to come to the site. It's MESORA.org. Take a look at the site. If you have questions on our articles, please email them in. We'll do our best to get back to you in a very timely fashion. And I thank you once again for having me today.
One last question before you leave. And that is, you know, Christianity has this New Testament, New Bible, Mark, Matthew, whatever, and they constantly refer back to the Jewish Bible, to their Bible, and what does the Jew have in their mind as far as the New Testament? What does that
The New Testament violates God's very words that you should not add or subtract from the Torah. The Torah was given complete, and the authorities of the Torah are the Jews, the rabbis. I'll give you an example. If, let's say, Ford comes out, the president of Ford has new designs for the next, the 2006 or 2007 automobile, wherever they're up to, and he gives it to the people at Ford. Will you go to the people at Buick or Dodge? Will you go to the people at Dodge and ask them, what are the plans? Or are you going to go to Ford? If Ford has the new plans, Henry Ford has the plans, he gives it to his people at Ford. So if you want to find out what those plans are you going to go to Dodge? No. You're going to go to the authors of the plan, of those blueprints, right? So the truth is you can't afford to dodge the truth. But in reality, you can't go to Dodge and ask the people what did Ford give. You go to the authors. You go to Ford. Same way with Judaism.
Well, they say it's been abrogated. They say an account of
and we addressed it. Isaiah 53. We addressed it on our website. If you go to Masorah.org and type in Isaiah 53, you'll see the article
that we wrote
where they're trying to say that a suffering individual is now considered to be Jesus. The truth is that without the oral law, which is part of what Moses received at Mount Sinai, not just the written law, he got two bodies of knowledge, the written law, the Torah, and the oral law, which is the Talmud and the Mishnah. And without one or the other, you don't have an accurate picture as to what's going on. And the rabbis and the oral law say clearly that whole account in Isaiah is talking about the Jews as an individual. A lot of times the Jews are called a man of war. Well, the Jews are many men. How could you call the Jews a man of war? Meaning you refer to the collective group as an individual. For whatever reason, God or the prophets had vocalized that type of an appellation to the group and called them by a man as opposed to men, that takes a study. But that in no way indicates that this is Jesus. It's just, and again, if God wanted to speak about Jesus, why didn't he use his name? I mean, the fact is that God used Moses' name many times. He used Abraham's name many times. Why all of a sudden here, one area that the person's name is not mentioned? I mean, the bottom line is that you can't try to interpret better than the authors of the Torah, the rabbinic authoritative body. You have to go to the rabbis if you want to know what the Torah is talking about. You don't go to an alien people that took the book after us that don't have the mode of understanding or of proper interpretation and exegesis. You go to the actual recipients of that law, and those are the Jews that stood at Sinai. I have to go. I wish you a good day.
I have a lot of questions. That
okay.
I want to ask
we'll
you
come back again.
See you again.
All right.
Okay. I know.